All right, so we are live. We are live. So I'm going to leave this up on the banner here just so people can kind of see. Again, we're kind of in the pilot episodes, the first couple episodes that we're going to be filling out the program and everything. We are streaming on YouTube as well, and we'll be working on hopefully adding another platform, maybe Twitch. I don't know yet. But I just kind of got to figure out what people are using nowadays. But if you want us to see the comments on Facebook, go to that link, streamyard.com/Facebook. It's going to ask to access your account. It's not going to steal your information. Don't listen to Chase. It's just looking to make sure it can add your face and your profile to the comments. So if you do comment, then we'll be able to see who exactly is saying what. Even if for some reason we don't end up getting people to comment live, doesn't matter. We are still recording as of right now, so people can always go back through and look at it. So Marcus, we are back. It's 2021. It's the return. We took a fan vote in the group, and these degenerates all decided that the group of five should go first, which I got to say is progress, man, because, you know, 6-7 years ago when I first joined the group, I doubt anybody but Jeff would have voted for that shit. But we had like 25 people vote for it. Maxion, man, Maxion gets people going, you know, and I'm glad people are finally paying attention to the smaller schools. So we hope to cover as much of the prime targets, not only for gambling, but just for entertainment purposes. That we can get to tonight. But first, wouldn't be a college football podcast if we didn't talk about the NIL.
Yeah.
So NIL is a big, big deal, probably for you and your program that you're a fan of in Ohio State, more so than pretty much anybody else. But what's your take on NIL? What does it mean to you? What do you foresee with the NIL?
You know, I think NIL is long overdue, right? I think we live in a world where it's time to separate academics and, you know, blah, 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 student athlete versus, you know, the business of college football. And for the first time, we're seeing players being able to take some power into their hands, be able to monetize and capitalize, right, off their image, and really utilize the platform that is the Ohio State University, University of Alabama, UGA, wherever it is. And I think you're seeing the next generation of players, right? Like you're seeing guys who are being able to, I wouldn't say unionize, they don't have a union, but I think you see guys cross, you know, conference lines, across geographic lines, whatever it is, working together and trying to establish, you know, a system to be able to best serve the players, because it has best served, you know, the program since the AP era, since 1936. Yeah. But I think you talk about, you know, the business of college football. And we got to be real, man. You know, the SEC is going to pay out. Listen, Oklahoma and Texas didn't join the SEC for academic affiliation. They joined that conference for athletic stability, profit sharing, and revenue generation. Those are the three reasons they chose to join the SEC. And I think you could put the playoffs and postseason on-field success all into that. But I'm glad to see it happen, man. It's long overdue. And I think, you know, I was just randomly bored, and I was like, man, what would be the top five players of years past who would have capitalized on NIL? Can you imagine Michael Vick, Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields? Those guys would have been millionaires, right, before you get to the NFL. And I think some of the things you'll see, if you look at the Quinn Ewers situations, where, you know, you're going to see guys at the lower levels, at high school level, really look at NIL as a way for them to invest in their future. And you're going to see a lot of players making decisions based on that. And I think, you know, from Quinn Ewers, and now you've seen, I forgot the quarterback's name, but he's in California. He's one of the top five players coming out next year. And he's already talking about reclassifying, because what that's going to do is force these, you know, state regulatory boards to be able to say, look, man, you know, we got to come up with a game plan, and to see this money trickle down from, you know, contracts in the NFL, NIL in college football, and NIL in high school. So I'm all for it. It's real well. I think you see, and people who follow college football really closely, just from recruiting, whatever, have seen, you know, the Quinn Ewers news and how big that is and how much that's changed the college football landscape. I think we could possibly look back at that in 3 to 5 years and be like, damn, man, that move really, really changed college football, because obviously we can't recall because it's never happened, but I'm just like, man, like we live in a world now where guys are going to be like, almost like a bowl, right? Like we see seniors like, man, I'm foregoing the bowl games, I'm foregoing my season, I'm going to the draft. Now you guys say guys, you know, foregoing high school football their last years to be able to play college football. So I, for one, am in favor. I know a lot of people are hesitant about the NIL just because of, you know, they're very – it's something new in the tradition of college football and the pageantry and all that stuff that, you know, why people like it. They're afraid that that's in jeopardy, but I don't think so. I think NIL is going to allow the big teams to be even bigger, the medium teams to become big, and hopefully it would allow, you know, you may see a situation where guys, or we just had a decommitment at Jaheim Singletary, who the number one corner in the nation is a guy who was committed to Ohio State, Florida guy. And he's decommitted. He's probably going to Miami, right? And I think part of it because of NIL is the sell of bringing a U back, you know, allowing these dudes to get some real money in their pocket and start to build their brand. So I'm all for it, man. I'm excited for it. And I just hope that, you know, going forward, though, I hope a lot of these programs are putting the right measurements in place because these dudes are young. They're going to be touching, you know, 100 bags, 100K, right? And they 18. I know if I was 18, I got 100 bags. I know straight where I'm going on the playground. I'm tricking them.
I'm 35 and you don't want me with
right. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm a copy of Hellcat. I'm a cop me some Off-White too. So I hope that these programs who got the resources in place to be able to help these guys with money management, understanding brand management and how to take control of their future. That's my biggest concern really out of it is to see, you know, players be at such a young age. You're going to have to learn hard money lessons. We all have, but man, I ain't never had to be able to walk into a building with so much expectation and to also have somebody say, yo, on top of that, I'm going to give you 100K. I'm going to make you a millionaire at 18, right? So I hope the families are prepared and the programs are prepared for the domino effect and the secondary and third, you know, effects that's going to happen from NIL. So
yeah, and my take on that is purely excitement just for the fact that, like you said, it's going to allow some of the middle road teams or smaller programs to maybe make a splash and become bigger players on the not only the recruiting scene, but on the field as well. But the biggest thing for me that I think that we're going to see is that leashes are going to get a lot shorter with some of these coaches now because there are no more excuses at this point. Like, you know, I hate to jump on this bandwagon, but Georgia, you were already recruiting like crazy anyway before that. Now you've got unlimited amount of resources and things to get some of these players that maybe might have turned to Bama here, might have turned to Bama there. You've got an incentive to overcome the fact that you don't beat Alabama. Like, none of that matters anymore. Like, right now with NIL, I think a lot of it's even playing field across the board at the very top. So then it comes down to coaching. Like, what are you going to do? Like, are you winning? You know, because if you stop winning, you know, at the end of the day, that's what a lot of these kids want, you know. Winning will build your brand. And that's going to be the selling point for the difference between going to Alabama or going to LSU. At the end of the day, the bag is going to probably be the same. But what sets you apart? What gives you the better opportunity to build your brand? And I think we're going to hear that a lot now, building my brand, which means that some of these kids are going to start making executive decisions like you were saying with yours. You're going to skip your senior season in high school if you can. You're going to read class and try to get to it as early as possible. Put yourself in the opportunity to be successful, not only on the field, but off the field, which is something that I don't think a lot of people really put a lot of stock into because publicly it would have been scrutinized. But now, like, yo, that's the wave. Like, ain't no need. You don't have to hide it no more. Like, yep, I'm getting the bag. That's what I'm here for. Pay me, you know, like,
right.
It kind of takes that mystery out of everything. So I'm excited. I do see where things can go far left or far right, but you know, being a college football fan, what we kind of knew about anyway, when it comes to some of these backdoor deals and whatnot, it's nothing new, you know. Yeah. Like I sent you the thing on bring the U back. Like that's probably been a thing for the longest time. Now they just gave it a slogan and a name and it's legal. But at the end of the day, we do have to be wary that there's going to be the boomers. They are not going to like the fact that they're losing the money. The old way of things is kind of out the door. So I anticipate when we do run across those scenarios like you were describing, where a kid's got 100K and he do some wild stuff, then you're going to see some legislation start coming down and some regulations. But right now, it's the wild, wild west out here, man. Like, you might get gunned down by the bagman.
Another thing that I don't think people are really focusing on that I think is going to be a positive too is think about the players who have had so much collegiate success, right? We're talking JT Barrett. We're talking Braxton Miller. Man, I'm just trying to think of some names off the top of my head. There's so many who are great collegiate players, but they don't go on to have NFL success, right? They never had a chance to be able to capitalize off their collegiate brand. A guy like JT Barrett, who for all of his issues at Ohio State was a fan favorite, right? Like a guy who would have been, you know, for somebody who's a graduate of the Ohio State University, his face was everywhere. He would have set to make millions of dollars in something that he would have never seen in his NFL contract. So I think you'll see a lot of guys too that not just quarterbacks are going to make the most money for sure. I mean, they're the most important. Yeah. We know how that game goes, right? The quarterback is the baby of everybody, but I think you're going to see, you know, linemen and IHOP deals, pancake. You know, it's going to find a way to be able to market, be creative in marketing, and also be able to find ways to help guys who don't have a shot at the NFL being able to, you know, solidify and establish their financial future. So, I mean, there's going to be some negatives. Look, there's going to be some wild scandals. There's going to be a scandal in the next 3 to 5 years.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's going to happen. We just don't know where it's going to happen. And now I think you're seeing a point where every month, man, the NCAA's power is diminishing. You know, and we're seeing where conferences, presidents, ADs, everyone wants to hold the NCAA more accountable. So I'd like to see really what secondary effects with third effects, you know, domino effect really all in all really causes, you know, the first round of legislation or how NIL is really going to be constituted. So it's going to be trial and error at first, but I'm going to tell you, man, if these quarterbacks are about to get buku money, you see guys like they say Arch Manning already is that, you know, his projected NIL target is $10 million. A guy like Quinn Ewers, you know, he's coming to Ohio State to – he's not going to play. Like, I mean, that's just clear as day. He's not on campus. I know I've been talking about it all week. He's just not going to play. He's literally coming at a red shirt and becoming a millionaire in his first year, right? Like, I mean, that's a hell of a recruiting pitch for Ryan Day, for Nick Saban, is to say, not only am I going to change – I don't have to change your life 4 years from now. As soon as you enter campus and you walk through our facility, I'm going to change your life, man. On top of, you know, the winning and everything else that comes along with it. So, man, I'm excited, man. Drop the bags. Ryan Day, Nick Saban, man. Give those guys all they want because truly they deserve it. They're the engine of this stream, of this revenue stream. So hopefully they find a way, man, to really get these guys what they deserve. So.
Yeah, one of the coolest NIL deals I've seen so far is there's somebody, I think, in the Midwest. The entire offensive line gets $500 a month, but they're sponsored by a barbecue joint. I was like, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm saying. You 18 or 19, even if you ain't a millionaire, I know if just being a regular Joe on the squad, I'm a regular dude that's like, man, I'm just trying to get in here, get a free education, get my degree. And you trying to tell me over the next 4 years, you know, I can find a way to accumulate $25,000, $35,000. As a college student, man, you like, damn, I'm a millionaire. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, getting free food, free sneakers, like, for me, somebody who's, you know, a sneakerhead and into, I really want to see how it affects Nike, how it affects Adidas, right? Because there's going to come a point to where what happens if you got somebody who's, let's say, Miami, who's one of the premier programs in the Adidas brand now. Mm-hmm. If they approach somebody like De'Aaron King, you know, the Jordan brand, and say, look, man, you know, we want you to be part of, you know, our roster. Like, how does that happen? I'm sure there's clauses in there that tells you what they can and can't do. Whatever, but you know, very much like the NFL, right? Like the Nike sponsors all the NFL licensed apparel, and then the players had their individual deals. Now, I do think college, you know, the college apparel deals are structured so crazy, right? And there's so many legislation around that. So, you know, I want to see what creativity happens, man. You know, if you had a place like OU or even UCLA now. UCLA now is part of the Jordan brand, man. If I'm in California, I'm the guy at UCLA. You know, like I can get a chance to get my own custom sneakers. You'd be the big man on campus. It just further adds to, you know, what your program can provide. So I think it's going to be a good opportunity.
So you got a little ahead of something that I wanted to touch on, but this is probably going to be the funnest part of the show.
Transition.
Yeah, baby. Big moves in the Big 12. Oh, my God, man. We got to get this out of the way. Everybody's talking about it because, you know, everything's just bigger in Texas, apparently. So Texas and Oklahoma got together and told the Big 12, we out. We're going to the SEC. And then there's been some fallout. Some of it's funny, like the legislators coming at the Texas president, like with all kind of stuff. But ultimately, we've discussed this on the side and in private. But like, does this benefit either team? Like you talked about the financial benefits and everything. Like, what do you think this does for these programs?
You know, first, I think it is beneficial to the programs because I do think long term that when you got two big players such as Oklahoma and Texas really holding down an entire conference from a financial standpoint, you know, the national brands, they're the two biggest brands in the conference. So I think for them, they wanted to establish themselves as, quote unquote, independent to be able to say, hey, man, we're going to leave this conference, go to the SEC, make a decision that's best for our stability and financial future. But that's all good, but at what point do we meet the law of diminishing returns, right? To where for every added good value, there's an equal lesser value, right? Like you're always going to essentially break even. I think I see all the positives, right? Like, you know, we know some crazy Texas fans, and I know that Ben and Jeff and all these guys may not want to face this fact, but what if Texas goes to the SEC, they have to elevate their on-field play in order for this to be beneficial for them long-term. Because as of right now, based on the last 10 years, Texas would be a middle-of-the-pack SEC program, right? I think that's fair. Like, that's not me. I mean, do I hate Texas? I wouldn't say I hate them. It's just Ben is annoying. But I would say that in order for Texas to really get back to being Texas, one, I want to see how the division shake out, right? Like, I think Bama is the, obviously, no pun intended, the elephant in the room, right? Yeah. Like, whoever plays opposite of them is going to be the most beneficial because now your path to Atlanta is that much easier. So I think if you look in the West, if they put UGA, Tennessee, Florida, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, I probably said Florida. I know I'm missing somebody else, man, but Ole Miss maybe I think is in – Ole Miss is in the West, but and you add Oklahoma into that and put Texas on the West. So if I'm looking at the top four teams in the West, I'm looking at Bama, I'm looking at LSU, I'm looking at A&M, and then Texas. Like, I don't know how beneficial that is right now. I know everybody is feeling real good about the Sark hire. Look, man, Sark is a great offensive mind. He's been a good offensive coordinator. But on paper, you're only as good as your record are. This dude's a 500 coach, man. Yeah. He's a head coach. Like, I know Jeff and all don't want to spin it as, oh, he was in rebuilding. I get that. Look, I was watching those Pac-12 at night games. Like, he's a good squad. But at the end of the day, it was like, well, he had his issues off the field. He had his issues on the field. And now hopefully he's obviously cleared those up. But I don't know for Texas. I think for Oklahoma now, Oklahoma has solidified themselves as one of the five best programs in college football, right?
Yeah.
And now we'll get to really see how Lincoln Riley translates to the SEC, which I think will be fine. I mean, everybody, I think, in that league is going to be trying to copy him. And it's just a copycat league, right? And I think he runs such a unique version of the air raid is that when he gets into the SEC, he's going to be able to raise his recruiting profile, especially in the trenches. That's been Oklahoma's issue. Defensive line, linebackers. If they can start to get guys from Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, right, those beefy – the thing that separates the SEC from anybody else is O-line and defensive line play. If they can start getting the three techs, the edge rushers that you see at Ohio State, that you see at Bama, that you see at UGA, then I think Oklahoma has a chance to elevate themselves. So I think a couple things had to happen for Texas and Oklahoma. Now, they're going to get cashed out, right? They're talking about $65-plus million a year per program. And that's great. And I think you're just going to be, like I said, you're going to be the rich, ugly girl. You're going to have all the money. Your dad going to give you whatever you want. But at the end of the day, you can't get a day. You can't get a spot at the table. You're just going to be a rich, kid at the kiddie table, right? And that's ultimately what I think is going to happen. I don't live in a world where I expect Texas, Nebraska, Tennessee, all these programs, Florida State, of yesteryear to just automatically return to glory. And throwing more money at the situation, is that really going to remedy any of their issues? You got to be able to close the border off in your state. Nick Saban and Ryan Day plucking Texas apart.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, I know Ben says whatever he wants to say, but it's like, look, man, you don't lose dudes like Quinn Ewers, right? Because the name of the game is college football is attrition. The more guys you get in the building, the more guys you get out of the building. That's just, that's how it works, right? That's the game of football and roster management. So I think those moves for Texas and Oklahoma, I expect Oklahoma to stay about the same, and I expect Texas to stay about the same. I think that's just where the programs are, unless Sark can truly elevate the recruiting, get those boosters and those, you know, regions off his ass, and maybe he can build something. But I think the Big 12, well, what's left of it, the Big 10, the second Big 10 with Kansas, Kansas State, you know, and everybody else that left behind, what are they going to do? I know they're in talks to maybe trying to do a merger with the AAC. That could be beneficial for, I think that'd be more beneficial for programs like UCF, Cincinnati, than it would be for, you know, KU, K-State, Texas Tech, and those guys. But, man, I mean, it's going to start a domino effect in college football. Like, you've already seen in the last week about, oh, KU's talking to the Big 12, the Big 10, excuse me, and Pac-12 schools like Stanford, UCLA, USC would have interest in joining the Big 10. So I think this is the beginning of a domino effect and another college football realignment. And like you said, I think the SEC wants to get to a mega conference. Should they call it Ryan Day? They call it Dabo Sweeney, Mike Norvell. They're trying to get everybody to listen, which I think is a really, really good strategy. But I think the what's next for the rest of the schools, I do want to see what happens. Like Texas and the OU was good. I want to see what happens to the remaining Big 12. And then after that, I want to see what happens with the rest of the realignment, because after that, everybody's going to be hunting for Notre Dame, right? The Big Ten is not getting Notre Dame. There's just too much bad blood between them. It's a, you know, I don't know how much Notre Dame wants to be in the Big Ten and compete. Listen, Notre Dame's a huge brand, right? Mm-hmm. A huge football brand. But for somebody who lived in the Midwest for a while, Ohio State, Michigan is still the top of this. If as bad as Michigan is, the name just rings bells differently in the Midwest, right? And so does Notre Dame. But I would still say, do you really want to come in a conference where you already feel you have this little brother inferiority to Ohio State and Michigan? And then, you know, you want to get into that situation, or do you want to go rebrand yourself in a place like the ACC? So it's going to be interesting, man. I think we're just seeing the beginning of this. And I just hope Kevin Warren doesn't fumble the bag.
I don't care what nobody says. If Quinn Ewers had committed to Texas, Texas would still be in the Big 12. They did this shit because they got embarrassed on the recruiting trail. It's been happening on a regular basis. If we looked at the top, if we took the top 10 schools in recruiting right now, they probably all got a foothold in Texas somewhere, and that's killing them. And there's this lie that people tell themselves to make them feel better. Oh, it's because of the SEC schedule. No, like Florida State's getting Texas kids. We don't have an SEC schedule. It's because people are just fed up with the hype and no results, man. I mean, honestly, they talk big and they don't show out. Yeah. You know, it's, you've been in the conference for 24 years. You got 3 conference championships, and you're like, well, you can't be nothing without us. Like, I mean, yes and no. You got a point because you're a brand, but the brand only carries you so far, you know? And at the end of the day, I stand by this, and I say this all the time, is that people need to see results. I think, like, I don't know if anybody remembers, maybe like 4 or 5 years back, I was saying that, you know, in this younger generation that's coming up, they don't see Texas winning. They don't see Vince Young. Like Florida State, we got the same problem. They don't see Jameis Winston. They don't see Peter Ward. They don't see Deion. They don't see those things. The U, kind of the same problem. They don't see Sean Taylor. They don't see Ed Reed. They don't see these teams. And people keep hyping it up. But it's like, yo, you're talking to people that's 17, 18 years old. All they see is Ohio State. All they see is Alabama. All they see is Clemson. All they see is either Oklahoma or Notre Dame, like these teams that have continued to establish themselves as winners. I was like, and yes, everybody eventually gets their five-star recruits, but the people who really stack five-star recruits are the people who are winning. And if you look at those top programs, they stand out because they have coaches. Like, it's like, you know, it's got to come to a head at some point where Texas has to be about where their place is in college football right now. So this is an opportunity for them. I feel like ultimately they've got more to gain than to lose in this situation, because if they lose, they'll just be like, well, you know, it's the SEC. Whereas Oklahoma has more to lose because they were already winning, already an established program. But if they come up here and they play these other established programs, they're in the SEC, and they don't continue to consistently compete, it's going to hurt them. It's going to hurt the brand a little. But like you said, I think they tend to gain the most on the defensive side with the kids that they will now have access to, which might make them more dangerous, because at this point you got to believe Lincoln Riley could do anything with anybody on offense. Yeah, like, yeah. On offense, I mean, he's rolling out quarterbacks left and right. If Rattler becomes a Heisman candidate this year, then, you know, we got to give it up to him. My man's been doing work. But one of the things that I think also that we're going to see is probably the pecking order, which is going to hurt Texas's feeling when they get grouped with Alabama, because Oklahoma's probably going to get pushed somewhere where they can continue to look good. Like, if we're restructuring the SEC, they're not going to put Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Oklahoma, like all the, that just ain't going to work, man. And so Texas is just going to get sacrificed. I mean, I truly believe that when it's all said and done, Texas will find its way in Alabama's like side. They're going to get sacrificed. Like, and it, they're not going to do that to Oklahoma. And this move, I think, was speared by Oklahoma. I think that's who the SEC really wanted. But Texas obviously brings some monetary value. But from a competitive balance standpoint or anything, they don't bring the same value, man.
Yeah, they don't, and they haven't been. I know we're going to talk about the Big 12 and later in the row, but my thing with, you know, being in the chat, just talking to people on Twitter, you know, I view message boards and all that stuff, and they all have this same build it and they will come mentality, right? Like, just by joining the SEC, there's going to be a net positive of recruiting. Kids want to align themselves to being in the SEC. Yes, I do agree with that. The SEC is the best conference in college football. They have the best recruit. You know, they're in the most fertile recruiting region, and they put up, you know, the most NFL players, and I get that. But at the same time, I think that that's so short-sighted, because you got to win. Look at the teams that don't win in the SEC, right, and how much money they pumped into their programs. Mm-hmm. Look at a place like Tennessee, or look at a place like South Carolina. Like, I think – now, I get it. Texas has historically been better than South Carolina, but as of right now, I don't know, right? Like, I think – what it takes to win at an elite level, to be a top five program in college football, Texas is really, really far away from that. Now, maybe Sark closes the gap in, you know, the next 2 to 3 years, but I'll give him a full player cycle, which is 4 to 5 years, 4 years, and I think we'll see. And I think what's going to be interesting coming down the road is this 12-team playoff is at a halt, right? I don't know if people have been paying attention to this, but everybody outside of SEC is saying, wait, let's slow this down and let's talk about some things we haven't talked about. Let's talk about player safety, how many games they're going to have to play. Let's talk about roster management and how many scholarships will have to be allocated. Let's talk about first-round buys and all these things. And as you've seen, a lot of 80s and presidents aren't for it. So now if you're in Oklahoma and Texas, you've made your chance, you've made your path to the playoff that much harder if it doesn't expand to 12 teams. If you're in the 14, if you're back, we're still in the 14 playoff 5 years from now, Sark's not going to be in Texas anymore. Texas, right, is cyclical with them. Like, it's the same process. It's hype, higher, results, fire. Like, it's truly a process, right? And you guys, at some point, they got to break that cycle. Like, if they can't break that process, it's going to be the same thing. And that's why I'm just like, okay, I mean, we're in wait and see mode, but I do think it's a good move for college football in its whole, because you get a brand like Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, and we know how much national coverage and how much prestige is in the conference. So I do think it's good to shake it up and get teams in, but from just being Do I think Texas will ever get back to a 10-win team? I don't think they'll average 10 wins in the SEC. I don't see it. If they're on the SEC West, I don't see it. Because they're probably going to have a cross, they're going to have a match over, a crossover game with OU every year. They're probably going to have a crossover with UGA or Florida. And I think those are safe to say two losses. Now you talk about in the West, LSU, and we'll see what Coach Orgeron has in the next couple of years, but A&M's better. LSU may be a wash. Bama's better. So if you, what you're going to do, average, you're going to be a 3 to 5 loss somewhere between that team every single year. I don't invent, even if they are in the East, I know Ben is praying that they get in the East. I don't know. I still think, what, they're behind Georgia and Florida.
Yeah.
I personally think that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, so if you do go to the East, you're the third best team in the East. If you're in the West, you're the third to fourth best team in the West. Like, you got to do something to propel yourself past A&M, past Florida. That's really where they should be focusing on right now. UGA, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, and Bama are out of their league. They got to be first focusing on that next tier. If they can master that next tier, I think Texas will find a way maybe to get back to that. But, no, I just don't see them joining the SEC and just getting better. I don't see them. So.
I don't see it either, but I can't wait. I love a good train wreck. So we'll move into the actual meat of the show, which we had to cover those two topics in the beginning because, I mean, literally that is the news coming out of college football right now. But we are here to talk about the group of five. We'll start with the American Conference first. Not really much to cover here. I'll get your opinion on whether or not your top two teams in this conference match my top two teams. But quickly, in 2020 in the AAC, Cincinnati dominated, going 6-0 in the conference, but 9-1 overall. Tulsa was right behind them at 6-0, but going 6-3. Then coming in at third was Memphis at 5-3 in the conference and 8-3 overall. And then mainstay UCF had an off year, going 5-3, and then overall 6-4. Returning leaders, Dillon Gabriel of UCF. Returns as the top quarterback in the conference. He had 3,570 yards, 32 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions last year, averaged 357 yards per game. Ulysses Bentley the fourth. Wow. Yeah. From SMU. I remember yeah, nice like, yeah, that was his full name. comes back, almost had 1,000 yards last year, 913 yards, 5.4 average, 11 touchdowns. Average 91 a game in an offense that you typically associate with running the ball. He was definitely a beast. And then Jalen Robinson is regarded as the top receiver, but you can make a statement for Calvin Austin III. Jalen Robinson had 55 catches, 979 yards, 17.8 average, but 6 touchdowns, whereas Calvin Austin, playing in a more prolific passing offense, was primary target, 63 receptions, 1,053 yards, 16.7 average, 11 touchdowns was his. So coming into 2021, I don't see how you could say that Cincinnati's not the top team in this conference. I don't think that's really much up for debate, but I'm sure not you, so fast, you yeah, friend. I'm sure you, I'm so sure fast, you got something. Friend. Go ahead, hit me with it.
All right, call me crazy, right? Like being
you're crazy. Vegan,
you know, the season, I am crazy. And you know what? I think when you're as brash as I am, you're comfortable with being wrong because I'm wrong a lot. So I'm cool with it. And I'm going to take a limb and say UCF, right? Like I think mm-hmm. Josh Heupel left the program in a great spot. The highest rated team in the AAC in Group of Five the last 4 years, and talk about how much talent is on the roster now. It's a roster that returns, what, I think 17 starters. You got Dillon Gabriel, who's a beast. I think he's going to be up for UCF's, like, all-time leading passer. And Gus Malzahn. I think they lose Josh Heupel to Tennessee, and you get a guy like Gus Malzahn. And I think for Gus to be able to step out of the SEC, out of the shadows of Nick Saban, and out of that weird conundrum and pressure that is Auburn football, right? Like, we've seen Gus at his best at Arkansas State when he's able to have low expectations, being able to – he has to have when I say dynamic, I mean a dual threat quarterback running his program, right? Like, we've seen him try to pocket passes and Stidham and also Knicks, but it came to very little fanfare, right? So I think him being in UCF, a smaller program, being able to really put his hands on that program and have an impact that he probably didn't have at Auburn. And they came off a 6-4 season. And I know people are writing them off completely just because of, you know, how much success Cincinnati has had. But I'm just going to go on a limb and say they're going to win the AAC in Gus's first year now. I still got some reservations about Gus as a coach, right? His time at Auburn, he's not the best coach in game, right? He does some very unique things in game management.
That's a good way to describe it.
And he does have a tendency to be, how can I say it about his offenses, stagnant, right? Like, they do lack a vertical passing game, a lot of creativity, and they give you a lot of things to prepare for because, you know, it's essentially the wing T morphed into this modern-day spread offense. And I think it does possess a lot of problems, and I think if he can get some of those guys that are tweener quarterbacks, right? Like, I saw the guy that they're really, really hot on at quarterback. I forgot his name, but, you know, he's being recruited by a running back as everybody else, but UCF wants him as a quarterback. So I think he's a Pat White type guy, right? Like a slim frame, lanky, just a guy who's just an elite athlete in South Florida. So, you know, I think getting out of the shadows in the SEC and of Nick Saban and Alabama, I think he's looking forward to it. At times in Auburn, man, when I saw him on pregame and postgame interviews, like, I'm like, damn, man, you excited to be the coach of Auburn? He just always looks so defeated. So, I mean, look, I'm probably going to be wrong. The odds of me being wrong are a lot higher than they are of me being right. But, man, look, Gus's first year in the AAC, and I think he is an experienced coach. He has a lot of good experience and big game experience. I think he will be able to provide a challenge to Luke Fickell in Cincinnati. Now you can go ahead and tell me just how nutty I am.
Okay. All right. I will definitely tell you you're crazy. But I will say to your credit, UCF offense is returning 8 starters. Their entire offensive line, both receivers and their quarterback, is returning. So yes, that will always be a boost for somebody like Gus, who has plenty of experience on navigating some of the tougher conferences and some of the tougher schedules. So that is a positive. However, UCF's defense surrendered 8.5 yards per pass attempt in 2020. That ranks 110th nationally. After holding opponents to 5.9 in 2019, they were almost twice as many yards. They are returning 3 people from that defense. I don't know if people usually get better when they have a shitty defense and they come back young. So that's a problem, because to Cincinnati's strength, which I think will be still their strength, they're returning 6 starters from a ridiculous defense last year. Cincinnati's defense allowed a touchdown on just 13.95% of opponents' drives in 2020. Not only was that the best in the AAC, but that was 3rd nationally. So they're returning 6 starters on offense as well. Both receivers and their quarterback are seniors. So that's going to be a boost for them. And then I just, in my mind, envision that this will be the 2 teams that come together in the matchup. You're going to have senior playmakers on the Cincinnati side going against just a shitty defense. That's a lot to ask. Yeah, and typically when a coach comes in, the first thing they usually can fix when it's a new team is the offense, or they can run with that. But like, defense is usually slow to come around. And then you got to also think that Desmond Ridder will take a step up. I mean, I think there's a lot of hype behind him, a lot of high expectations. He has shown that he is game. And then they only lost to Georgia by 3 last year. And Georgia actually played. Their fans might say they didn't, but no, they were trying. And that was a hotly contested game. They got their first taste of a bigger program in a hostile environment in a big, big matchup. And they just fell a little short. And that was their only loss last year. So they have a tougher schedule this year, obviously. They're going to be September 18th at Indiana, then October 2nd at Notre Dame. Those are back-to-back weeks. That will not be a bye week walk. It's a bye week in between. That won't be a cakewalk. But as I was saying before the show started, if they can get over that hump, as we got somebody out here trolling here, since he has the best QB in Ohio, I'm gonna take a stab and say that's Akeem. But as we wrap up the American Conference, I was gonna say it's a two dog race to me in Cincinnati and UCF. Now, from a gambler's perspective, if you're looking for some value, you could look at Houston to have some value in some games, whether it be against the spread or just in general the offense. I am not a huge fan of the coach. Me and Dana got a standing beef. So
cover man a lot in West Virginia.
Yeah, that's
we could get into that, man, another time.
Dana hasn't been good against the number in the last couple of years, and he does some inexplicable roster adjustments and pisses off his players, and they haven't seemed to really play for him in his tenure in Houston. I feel like when he was in West Virginia, guys would play for him, but nobody's running through a wall for him. Other than that, yeah, you shouldn't expect much out of Tulsa. SMU going to have a great running back, but they're going to take a step back. My Green Wave, they're going to probably put up a ton of points on offense. They do have some pedigree in their offensive coordinator hire. I forgot his name, but he used to be Notre Dame's offensive coordinator a couple years back, but he's got some pedigree. And people should keep an eye on that for overs. But other than that, it's a two-dog race. I've got Cincinnati winning this race. My sheet says 11-2, but honestly, I feel like they're cutting them a little short. They're going to beat Indiana or Notre Dame. They'll beat one of them.
Yeah,
it could possibly be two. Yeah.
I think losing Marcus Freeman to Notre Dame is – Luke Fickle's a good defensive coordinator, right? Like, yeah. He was obviously the defensive coordinator at Ohio State for a couple of years. Like, great system. But he allowed Marcus Freeman to really become who he is now. He's one of the better recruiters and best assistant coaches. He's a pain in our ass at Ohio State and Notre Dame right now, mm-hmm. because he's hip, he's young, you know, and he's a brother. And he's just recruiting, man, like crazy at Notre Dame. And that's something you haven't seen. But I think they're going to replace Marcus Freeman pretty easy. I do think they'll split one. I think they'll beat Indy and lose to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Now, I think there's a bye week after the Notre Dame game to open conference play. Now, it's one of those sleepy, dreadful Friday night games against Temple. Now, Temple's going to be the worst team in the AAC, but
– Oh, without a doubt.
Things could get a little dicey in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial. There's going to be 20 fans in the stands. There's going to be a game they expect to blow out because that following week, they have a week to prep, for UCF. Following that, now Houston, Hogerson is interesting, right? They had so many players redshirt after four games, then a COVID year, and they got what, six games canceled, and then they got like 10 games canceled or something like
that. Yeah, it was kind of wild.
So that was kind of weird. But the talent level is there to return to being, you know, I know Major Applewhite kind of got fired, but he did get fired. But he has some success there. We saw Art Briles had success there. We saw Tom Herman had success there. So it's a fertile recruiting region, and I think there's enough talent for Houston to be competitive. And when I mean competitive, I just mean by, you know, not being one or two, not being UCF or Cincy. So year three is when coaches start to make a mark on their program. They got, I think, 9-10 starters back, so that's possible. But team I like over Tulsa is SMU. Like, I love Sonny throw it on 3rd-and-1 Dykes. That's what I call him. It's 3rd-and-1. We backed up. We're gonna throw four verts. We're going 888 old air raid play, just straight vertical. So I think his version of the air raid, he's obviously been one of my favorite air raid coaches, right? He's from the Mike Leach tree. And yeah, he's done a really, really good job, right? Like, you saw him and Shane Bouchel, they did some pretty good work the last couple of years. And I'm like, how ironic that you go from Shane Bouchel, former Texas quarterback, to the next year to Tyler Mordecai, who was a former Oklahoma quarterback. Yeah. I was like, that's just ironic. But, you know, I think they could make some noise, man, because I think Sonny Dykes has done a really good job at SMU. No matter who's in the air raid system, they're going to get production out of the quarterback. Now, I don't know what they'll be able to do defensively, But I think if they can show a little bit of fight, you know, they've had a tendency, like air raid teams, to blow leads late in games because they can't really stop the run and they can't run the ball either, right? So I think they lose Shane Bouchel, they get 18 starters back and some quality transfers. I think SMU could – they could make some things pretty interesting. I think the gap between the top two is big, but not so big to where I don't see – I could see – UH or SMU maybe pulling an upset of one of those top two teams. So, like you said, Tulsa's going to be nice. You got Phillip Montgomery, who's a Browse disciple, who's done really, really good at Tulsa. They actually come to Columbus, I think, game 1, 2, 3. They come to Columbus game 3. So, if David Blinn or whatever the quarterback's name is, excuse me, I forget, but if he can be solid, right, if he could be a quarterback who can throw in the 55% to 60% completion range should be ideal, right, for a college quarterback considering RPOs and the ease of access throws that he can get. If he could be a consistent guy, I think they could be an 8-win team. So the AAC is very tough, man. It's a very tough conference to, you know, really solidify yourself because they got some great teams and then a good string of just good, solid football teams. Well, good, solid coaches, too, that would be able to present, you know, some game plan and challenges from week to week, so.
Yeah, and there will be some bumps in the road. I still just trust Cincy more than I trust Gus, man. key players to watch while we're wrapping this up. On offense, obviously, I talked about Desmond Ridder. But really, Ulysses Bentley, the fourth. My man, Mr. Bentley, like, for real, check him out, man. Check him out. He's a beast. He's a beast. And then on defense – Ahmad Gardner on Cincinnati. I just like his game. He's a in-your-face type corner, solid. Don't do a whole lot of talking, but he's definitely one of the more physical presence on that outside position. So definitely
he's gonna be a top 40 pick.
Yeah, definitely somebody to watch out for. Switching over to the next of the group of five, Conference USA. Conference USA is split between the East Division and the West Division. Let's see if we go over the 2020 season. Conference USA was a little weird. They definitely had some COVID issues last year. I do recall that. So not everybody got the same amount of games. And then poor Marshall didn't seem to play for like almost a month at one point. But Conference USA 2020 standings, Marshall was 4-1 in the East, 7-3 overall. Coming in second in the East was Florida Atlantic at 4-2, 5-4 overall. And then everybody else had a losing record overall. Going over to the West, UAB was 3-1 in the conference, 6-3 overall. And then the Roadrunners, which I think was a big surprise to a lot of people, were 5-2 in Conference USA and 7-5 overall in the 2020 standings. One thing to note. Let's see. I guess they didn't do too well in their bowl games either. Nope. They didn't. Never mind. So I won't even go over that. Anyway, in the East, I've still got the Thundering Herd coming in first this year. I'm really high on the Thundering Herd, more so because I like their quarterback, which is so sad that I'm like this. But, I mean, it's a white guy with a big arm. So that's pretty much my MO for quarterbacks that I like. But, look, Grant Wells is a gamer. I seen it with my own eyes. But the biggest thing that I like about this team and the biggest thing I've always liked about Marshall is that they've got some grown men in the trenches. That is typically why they do well in this conference. They've always had that advantage in the trenches on both sides of the ball, actually. So not just offense, but defense as well. They are returning 17 of their 22 starters from last year, 9 on the offensive side, 8 on the defensive side. The Marshall's defense kept opponents out of the end zone 87.9% of the time, allowing just 14 touchdowns and 116 drives. Best in Conference USA, number 2 nationally. To me, they're still leaps and bounds better than everybody else in their conference. If they can get the consistency in their schedule, I don't foresee them actually losing a game with this particular schedule. And I think Grant Wells starts to get like NFL hype, but he's not ready yet. Go ahead, Marcus.
Talking about the Thunder and Herd.
Yeah.
I don't know what Charles Huff got, right? Like, he's just a Bama assistant, so I'm just supposed to expect, like, firing Doc Holliday was just mad weird. It was hella weird because you talk about somebody who's been a statesman, right? Like, an older guy, well, I use that word for a lot of older coaches, just a guy who can guide the program, steer the ship. Now, I know they may feel they probably a little better than a 9-3 Conference USA program, but I don't know what Charles Huff has. I think I'm not willing to bet on Marshall. I think Florida Atlantic, UAB, and Western Kentucky might be a little better. I think for me, Florida Atlantic, your guy, Willie Taggart, has found. And I think Gus Malzahn would be very similar to Willie Taggart. I think last year, even though he went 5-4, I know it's his second year at Florida Atlantic, but you get a guy, Miami transfer like Nikosi Perry, you get to be able to have other transfers at big-time skill positions. And we've seen the formula to be really successful in Group of Five is to where get a Power Five starting quarterback, vertical threats. And you can usually do what you want in that conference. But I think Marshall, UAB, Western Kentucky, and Florida Atlantic are all well within each other. I just don't know what Charles Huff has. I don't think Marshall's a bad pick. I just don't know a lot about him as a coach, just other than being one an Alabama assistant. But if he can be equal to what Doc Holliday was, excuse me, I think they'll be fine. But I just don't know. It's just uncertainty. So I'm not really ready to ride on Marshall yet. I would say that my bet would be Florida Atlantic or UAB to win the Conference USA. And Conference USA is my least favorite group of five.
It is a acquired taste for sure.
And I love football. Like, I mean, I watch this shit just 24/7. Like, I don't even date sometimes because I just sit in the house and just watch football all day Saturdays. But I'm just like, man, that conference is, I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at these names, and I'm just like, what offense would I want to see? Like, what style of – what draws me to watching UTEP out of here, Rice out of here. South for Charlotte, North Texas, I do like them. Cool. Mm-hmm. Louisiana Tech and Skip Holtz. Bleh. UTSA was surprising. The Roadrunners were good, but I'm like, ODU stink. Charlotte is – trying to, you know, build their program, Florida International, Middle Tennessee, what Marshall. It's not the Sun Belt, it's not the AAC for me, but maybe, you know what, maybe I can stop being as prejudiced towards the Sun Belt, Conference USA, and put them, be more open-minded about the conference and watch more. Nothing really gets me excited like watching Old Dominion and Rice.
The disrespect. The Western side, I've got UAB, but I will put out the disclaimer here. The Roadrunners are an interesting team. They are returning 21 of the 22 starters from last year's team that was 7-5. They improved from 2019 to 2020. They almost allowed a whole yard less per possession or per play. Only seven schools and FBS defenses made more progress. That's impressive to me as well. And it's just one of those things where you're returning 21 people from last year, and you were 7-5, kind of a surprise team. You were 5-2 in your conference as well. Like, you got to expect that they're going to hit the ground running. They could be dangerous on that Western side. And I'm sure that Marshall is happy that they're not on the on the Eastern side. The game to watch, I think, is going to be November 20th when the Roadrunners take on UAB. That could decide who wins that side of the division and who faces Marshall or Florida Atlantic in the conference championship. I do have some sad news to report from action. It is no longer what it used to be. The Sun Belt is now the new MAC. So it's unfortunate that it has to go down like this, but there will still be value. There will still be gambling value. We're not going to give up on the gambling. But as far as, like, you know, these teams being like our darlings that they're going to hit bowl games and run up on people, in my mind, there's really only one team that I kind of respect out of this conference to do anything, and it's the mainstays, Buffalo. I know people are higher on Toledo than I am, but there's just something about Buffalo's team that I just really like. And it, again, starts up front in the trenches. Like, they have a senior left tackle, senior left guard, and a senior right guard, and a junior center. Like, even their right tackle is a junior. He just didn't start last year. And the quarterback is a senior, and he's coming back. And they're just a dominant force on both sides of the ball in the trenches. They're returning three seniors on their defensive front, two seniors at linebacker, a senior at corner, a senior at free safety. So out of their 14 returnees, over half are seniors. And I think that's huge. They were a good team last year. I expect them to kind of just maul everybody in the division like they always do and work their way through the MAC. Although last year they didn't win the championship, I do believe Ball State tricked them up, but I think this year they'll close it out and win it. One thing to note with the Buffalo Bulls, the Bulls averaged 7.3 yards per carry, per play in 2020, an increase of 1.9 yards. By that measure, Buffalo boasted the most improved offense in the nation last year, just off that metric. Their schedule is very, very interesting because on September 11th, they travel to Nebraska. Granted, Nebraska is not that great of a team, but if Buffalo can secure a win like that on their resume and go on to have a good showing in MAC, that will probably get them a lot of hype. So
I don't know if you can read that.
Not so fast, my friend. Go ahead.
Yo, shout out to Lee Corso, man. Hey, don't sue me, man. He probably got that thing copyrighted. I'm just trying to pay homage, man. But look, losing Lance Leipold is going to be a big deal, right? Actually, one of my former coaches, right? So Coach Mo was the DB coach at JMU when I was there. He coached the safeties. And, you know, I played D-line linebacker. And he's the head coach now at Buffalo, look him up. Like, he's a really, really sharp dude. He also coached with the Cowboys. He was young. He was a GA when he coached us. But you could kind of tell he had that, like, head coach type energy, and he just got it. So I think replacing Lance Leipold is going to be tough. And load me up on Toledo. Everything you got, load me up on Toledo and Kent State, man. I think Toledo's offense is by far they're going to be the best in the MAC. And the MAC is a conference where you got to score points. So I know Buffalo's replacing a little bit, but I'm looking at Toledo, and it's like, man, like, they do have a tough schedule. They got to face Ball State, Ohio, and Central on the road this year. But they do host
Western. Got Notre Dame, too.
Yep, and they have – I think that – let me look at Toledo's. I had Toledo circle as one of my fan favorites this year, and they get Carter Bradley back, and they get – Bryce Mitchell, who's nice, and Isaiah Winstead, who's nice. So I'm going to go with Toledo just because, I mean, they're returning like 19 starters or something like
21
that.
21 starters.
21? Sheesh. Yep. So it's like they're returning 21 starters, and they're probably the most talented team in the MAC. But like you said, the schedule is tough. But, man, I'm going to always side with a team that can get vertical and can score points, and they got, you know, the quarterback position figured out. And I think if you could do those two things in the MAC, you can easily win that conference. But yeah, the schedule is crazy. They got Behold, the Green and Gold, and Norfolk State. That's a win. At Notre Dame, Colorado State, they got Ball State, UMass, Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, Western, Eastern Michigan, then Bowling Green, Ohio, Akron. So watch out for Ohio too. Like I know Frank Solich retired, but Ohio was usually a solid MAC program, right? Like they're able to make a bowl, be 8-4, maybe 9-3, and kind of contend for the MAC championship, but don't always win it. So watch out for the Bobcats. I'm not just going to side with Buffalo, man, just because coaching changes can be hard to bet on, man.
I agree.
It's 50-50.
But
you just got to be on the right side of the coin.
In my mind, just that the style of play and the fact that they're returning so much up front on their defensive side. And just like I said, what they usually do, their body of work in the trenches makes me more optimistic. Like even with the fact that Toledo's returning 21 kids on both sides of the ball, their defense is just usually soft. And the games that get Toledo every fucking time, the games that get Toledo are games like November 16th at Ohio, where it's just an inexplicable hiccup on their part and they lose. I'm not too worried about them outside of obviously the Notre Dame game, because again, they're going to have mostly home games against opponents that probably would have given them fits. But it's just, like I said, the games against people like Bowling Green and Ohio, where they're going to come in like 21-point favorites and they just find a way to trick it. So they're definitely the most talented team top to bottom in that conference. So we'll see how that plays out. In the Mountain West, which is funny, I highlighted all notes on like everybody, but Mountain West got me so pissed off. I didn't highlight anything. And I'll tell you why. So Mountain West last year, we go over the 2020. Let me change the banner real quick. Sorry, guys. Mountain West is near and dear to me because of San Diego State and obviously Wyoming. Shout out to my boy Josh Allen. Those are the type. That's where I find my big arm quarterbacks or the random person that nobody likes, like Bryce Love. Like that's where I find these guys at. And then of course the Midnight Matinee, my Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. You gotta always show love to them because they just always have a way of getting you some money late at night. But this Mountain West is going to be competitive this year.
Yeah, it's gonna be real tough.
There's an argument to be made for four or five teams that could honestly win this conference. I will say it's probably easier to talk about who's not really in contention in my book. San Diego State, usually a mainstay. I don't think they have enough. Fresno State, I don't think they have enough. Air Force, again, I don't think they have enough. And then the Rams and Lobos, Aggies, Rebels, yeah, count them out. But the four teams at the top, you take your pick. Boise State in the Mountain Division, Wyoming in the Mountain Division, and over in the Western Division, Nevada, and then my favorite, San Jose State Spartans. I don't think San Jose State was a fluke last year. I think they embraced the momentum that COVID gave them, with pretty much everybody kind of being like all off kiltered, and they played on raw emotion and they smacked people in the mouth. And I think that's going to carry over this year. I like what they had last year as far as playmaking ability on the offensive side of the ball, but the real key to San Jose State's dominance in that conference was the fact that their defense played with such reckless abandonment and forced turnovers. They are returning all 11 starters back from that defense last year. That this defense this year has 8 seniors on the defense. That's got to be a huge, huge boost for them. They're returning 9 offensive starters, including their now senior quarterback, Nick Starkel, which gave them a big boost offensively, which we haven't seen in San Jose State in a while. Honestly, in my opinion, it's their conference to lose. They smacked Boise. Boise State tried to run from the fade last year, and then they still found a way to come to Boise State and still smack Boise State. Like they didn't care. They would play you anywhere at any time. And I mean, it was just great to see a team like this kind of come out of nowhere and then maintain that momentum. So I expect big things out of them. Do you feel like Boise State or Nevada is going to be at the top again, or is this San Jose State's chance to capitalize?
I pick Nevada to win the Mountain West. Jay Norvell, the longtime OU assistant under Bob Stoops, he's really done a good job building Nevada into a contender. They're returning 20 starters and an NFL caliber signal caller, right? And I think Carson Strong is his name. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So you got Carson Strong, and you also got a guy in Elijah Cooks who's going to be a top 50 pick. And people don't. Never heard of Elijah Cooks. He reminds me a lot of Rashad Bateman. He's like 6'5", like 215, explosive, vertical threat, physical at the point of, you know, contact, goes up, makes a lot of contested catches. Nevada, I don't know if people know this, but Nevada's loaded, man. They by far the best team in the Mountain West, right? Like offensively, for sure. Like they got a top 10 receiving core in college football. And I think that just sounds crazy for people to say for Nevada, but I think, like I said, they're by far the most talented team in the Mountain West, but they get a tough draw, man, with Boise State
early
and San Diego State early and on the road. But I do think if they win both of those games, like, I think you'll hear Nevada's name a little bit more nationally, like you see with Coastal or Cincy or some of the other teams. But, you know, I think San Diego State, too. Like, I made some notes here. Like, I had Nevada, San Diego State. I had San Diego State, San Jose State, and Hawaii kind of the same. Nevada's number one. Then Boise, Wyoming, you know, Air Force Service Academies is cyclical because you don't know what you're getting in and out of the academy. So that's tough. But I like Nevada, and then I like Boise State as well. But I don't know how much – what's Boise going to look like, right? Like Aaron Avalos, like, I don't know. Like last year wasn't a great year, and to think that they still – it's funny that I say it wasn't a great year, but – They went to, what, four straight Mountain West title games, I think I got here, and it's like they've had their worst offensive defense statistically since 2016. And that's unheard of for Boise, right, for being making the mark that they did offensively. But they lost Brian Harsin to Auburn. Andy Avalos, I don't know what he's going to be. Hank Bachmeyer, he looks solid. He'll start. And I just want to see what the new Boise system looks like. But I mean, they do return 17 starters, and they should be better on offense and defense. But I'm rolling with Nevada, man. That's where I put my money on. That's where I put my future money on. And it'd be hypocritical and stupid for me to get on this show and act like I'm just, you know, going to ride with the Broncos. Or even San Diego State's going to be good. I think San Diego State's going to be all right. Like, they've been probably the most consistent.
Yeah, but how do they score? That's the issue. Like, everybody else has got enough offense that – that plotting style that they play, like you're not going to hold these teams to 10 to 17 points anymore. Like, it's just not going to happen. And that's kind of how they used to beat people, is that they would wear you down, ground you down, and hold you under those points. But like Boise State, their offensive coordinator is an air raid guy from UC Davis. Like, so you got to expect they're going to open it up at some point. San Jose State is a team that has already shown that they can open it up. Wyoming might be a team that kind of plays that plotting style, but they are very efficient in the red zone. So, again, like for a team like San Diego State that's going to have to win by field position, and I'm not even going to try to even make a case for them beating Nevada, but like for them, like having to play that field position style of play, I think it's just too much firepower for them to keep up with these teams. Like, You got to expect that they're going to score at least 21 to 24 points on San Diego State. And San Diego State is going to struggle to score over 17 or more a game. That's just how they play, unfortunately. But it should be a dogfight. Since we are talking about the group of five, I would say that this is by far the second most exciting conference in the group of five as far as like what could happen. There will be some value in these lines on San Jose State, Nevada, Boise, and Wyoming when they play each other. I would say pay attention to the trends, as these teams, just like the MAC, are very prone to play really well at home and then have some struggles on those weeknight games on the road. So you kind of got to maneuver your way through the schedule. I know San Jose State caught a couple people lacking last year during the week. So, again, just one of those things where you got to pay attention to that. Moving over to the new MAC, Sun Belt Fun Belt, also known as the Sun Belt 12. If you run across any Texas fans, let them know Louisiana's coming back to claim their position in the Big 12. This is a 2-3-man race, depending on how you look at it. Everybody's going to hear about me and Coastal Carolina all year long. Shout out to Jeff. I don't care if you're not listening to the show, Jeff. I'm going to remind you to go to like the hour and 8 minute mark so you can hear me tell you that I told you so about my Chanticleers, and you were pissed off. What the hell is a Chanticleer? It's a rooster. That's all it is. It's a rooster. Anyway, the Sun Belt is broken down between the East Division and the West Division. Thankfully, the two predicted best teams are in opposite divisions, so they don't necessarily have to meet each other until the end of the year. But Coastal Carolina does have mainstay Appalachian State in their division. I think a lot of people are knocking Appalachian State down because of what happened last year, and obviously Coastal Carolina returning such a prolific offense, defense, and overall successful team last year. There's a lot of people that are a little lower on Appalachian State, but Appalachian State's returning 17 starters. Coastal Carolina's returning 19 starters, and only one of their starters on defense isn't returning, so that's pretty good for them. And Coastal Carolina twice. And then the Raging Cajuns are returning 20 starters. So, again, it's going to set up for a really good conference. But if you look at the schedule, you can't help but notice that Coastal Carolina or Appalachian State goes to Miami on September 11th. Coastal Carolina's toughest game is probably at Buffalo, which is September 18th. But these Raging Cajuns, they ain't no hoes, man. They got Texas opening day, September 4th, at Texas. What do you think about the Sun Belt?
I love the Sun Belt. Even before these teams really, really blew up in the last 3 years, it was still always a fun conference, I think. For those of the people that don't know, Billy Napier is a coach on the rise. He's a guy who's, you know, paid his dues as an assistant and now had a chance to build Louisiana Raging Cajuns into what they are. He's definitely going to be probably the hottest name on the market next year for a group of five coaches who are probably looking for Power Five jobs. He's gotten Louisiana to what the Sun Belt's title game. Each of his first 3 years or something like that, they haven't won it, but that says a lot about, you know, a program who's been consistently bad in the Raging Cajuns. And I think they're my clear favorite to win to the Sun Belt West. They're returning 20 starters. They do got to get App State on the road, and they do play Independent Liberty Flames later in the season. So they did upset Iowa State last year, right? And they was number 9. So I think it is worth keeping an eye on to open the game against Texas, because if you want to spring an upset, you got a lot of the ingredients you need. You got a great group of five coach and experienced conference. You got an experienced signal caller and quarterback returning. And you also have on the other side a coach who is his first year at Texas. You don't know exactly schematically how things are going to look. So I think, man, what's the points on that, man? I whatever the points are, if Texas is given anything less than 7.5, I would take it. I'm sure the line's going to be way bigger.
Well, you know, I've been on this since it opened. I put like $300 on the 14.5. It opened at 14.5. I put 300 on it, and I checked earlier this week to troll Ben. It's down to 9.5. People have been smacking it. But I was on this game literally since it's been announced. I was just waiting because I just knew that once Sarkisian became coach, that they were going to overvalue this. The Raging Cajuns last year, I don't know if anybody really remembers, and one of the reasons why we're hyping them up, when they play Iowa State, they absolutely dominated on the defensive side of the ball. They force turnovers, and they make them pay. The quarterback is an athletic quarterback who can be dynamic. They also are returning their entire offensive line, and the majority of their defense is returning as well. And, that, again, it's another defense that that just creates turnovers. Louisiana Raging Cajuns intercepted 16 passes across 343 passing opportunities last year, a 4.7 rate that led the Sun Belt and ranked third nationally. Again, they are a terrorizing defense that knows how to create turnovers, and then they're able to flip the script on you in such a way that you can go down 14, 17 points in no time. And I mean, that's literally how they won most of their games. They just blitz people. Like, people didn't, like, they come in with a strategy, and then all of a sudden it's not going the way that they wanted it to go. And, you know, you end up down big, and you got to kind of come out of the shell that you want to play in. So they do have to kind of be on the back heel a little with Sarkisian, but one could argue that they also have the advantage because this unit is so cohesive with their coach and the returning players. And then you've got Texas, they got a name, but there's a lot of pressure on these guys and a lot of pressure on Sarkisian. and the news about transferring to the SEC, like there's going to be a lot of extra variables that could work in the Raging Cajuns' favor, but I doubt Texas is going to take them lightly after seeing what they did to Iowa State last year. And Iowa State was they're a top 15 team when they got beat. Yeah, yeah. So you don't want to mess that up. But again, we're going to disagree because you disrespected my boys, my rock-a-doodle-doodles, Grayson McCall for Heisman, dark horse. I said it on our podcast.
He's going to put up good numbers.
He should. But primarily what excites me is that they're returning most of their defense. And I loved the Coastal Carolina defense last year. We're talking about improving. Coastal Carolina improved 2.6 yards per passing attempt offensively and cut 1.5 yards per pass attempt off of their defense. Together, that was tied for the nation's best discrepancy between offense defensive differences in passing attempts. So they're a really fun team, in my opinion, because they do so much on offense. Like, there are games where you would have been like, oh, this is an air raid offense. And then there are games where you're just like, is this a triple option offense? Like, they can mix and match so well. And in a conference like they play in, where a lot of teams don't have that flexibility, that definitely gives them an advantage. Obviously, having a coach and players like Louisiana Lafayette has helps them kind of make up for those like instances where they just kind of do all kind of crazy stuff. But they're a team that you just honestly can't predict what they're going to do, but understand that they come to play. They come to play. So my favorite win last year, once again, shout out to my boy Jeff, when Coastal Carolina beat BYU on a 2-day notice. Don't ever let them disrespect you like that again. All right, so we are going to wrap up the show. Marcus, give me your top five ranking for the group of five.
Man, my top five ranking is UCF, Cincy, Louisiana, Nevada, and Brigham Young. Those would be my top five.
Oh, you're right.
Group of five. BYU technically is not a group of five.
Yeah, they're
independent.
Yeah, I was supposed to add the independence at the end. We'll cover the independence all together.
We'll catch them somewhere else. But
because I don't want to group them in with the group of five because it might confuse people. All right, my top five.
So I tell you what, let me take BYU out and put Boise in.
Okay. I had it written down on my work computer, but I didn't print it off. So I think my top five is going to be Cincinnati number one. Number two, I'm putting my Chanticleers because I'm obviously biased. Number three would be San Jose State because, again, I'm obviously biased. Number four is the Raging Cajuns, who I do expect to be the upset alert special come week one when they go into Texas. And then number five, I don't like UCF like you like UCF, unfortunately. So number five for me would be Nevada, which honestly they were not on there until you so eloquently put it. They are a tough team.
Nevada.
I think I docked them a little bit unfair just because of the whole Kaepernick remember. Like every time I see the Wolfpack, I think Colin Kaepernick. Makes me think of NFL, think of Harbaugh, and it goes down that rabbit hole, and I just hate everything. But we will be back next week. I'm going to post this. I'm going to post tomorrow and ask people what they want to do as far as the next conference. But group of five, again, not every podcast will be this long. We spent 30 minutes on the NIL and the other news. So technically, if you take that 30 minutes out, it was about a 45-minute podcast, which is what we were aiming for anyway. But we will be doing conference reps because we now have the Power Five conferences. It'll be somebody from our committee. If you're not familiar with that, we'll make sure we get you to be introduced to them. But I am going to see which conference we're going to do first and which person we will get on to talk about it. And we will hopefully be able to get you guys to share your Facebook information so we can see who's commenting what. Yeah, right?
Stop listening to Chase. I'm a conspiracy.
Yeah.
He will lead you down the dark webs of Al Gore's internet. Don't do that.
So I guess in closing, make sure you guys check out our other shows, which is the Team Turn Broker podcast, which comes out every week with Sam, Keith, Ronnell. Don't listen to any of the stuff that they do with Ronnie because it's slanderous. And then Ronnie and I do the You Got a Minute Fam podcast. I am actually happy to announce I will be getting my profile back next week, or actually in 2 days. Yes. So hopefully I won't lose that again. I promise I'll be on my best behavior because it is affecting our podcast. We do have a YouTube channel. This is posted on the YouTube channel. I'll continue to advertise that. I'm hoping that maybe Marcus and I can figure out a way to collaborate, kind of do like a film study thing. I know he's into that stuff. I can just add commentary, but he's the expert in that field, and I think that would be something we could add to the YouTube channel to do breakdowns on, to kind of build the brand, especially with college football, because there's a lot more interesting things going on in college football than the NFL when it comes to schemes, majority of the time. So something we'll look to do in the future. I will announce Joe Matz and I will be doing a podcast together. I don't have a name for it, but you can imagine it'll be quite the dynamic because he's a nerd and I'm not. So we'll figure that out and come up with the name of that.
You like Joe Buttons, man. You the podcast king.
Well, I'm trying. I ain't really did nothing yet, but I'm trying. Like, I'm trying to make the brand better, man. Football season is our the turn of the corner for our group and everybody. So we want to get as much content out and much support as we possibly can. So signing off for the night, I am Actively Lazy, and this is my boy Marcus. We are college football podcast hosts, and we will see you guys next week.
Till next time, man. Appreciate it.
No problem.